And welcome, everyone, to a very special episode of Podcasting Them Softly. This is Nick, and of course, I'm joined by Frank. What's going on, buddy?
Not much, man. How are you doing? Super excited.
Yeah, super excited, too. Very excited. Today, we're very honored to be joined by the fantastic actor Paul Calderon, who has appeared in a wide range of some of our favorite films and TV shows for close to the last 40 years. Paul's worked with filmmakers such as Quentin Tarantino, Abel Ferrara, James Mangold, Alejandro González Iñárritu, Steven Soderbergh, Spike Lee, Sidney Pollack, Harold Becker, Sidney Lumet, and that's just naming a few, with credits including Pulp Fiction, King of New York, Bad Lieutenant, Welcome to New York, Q&A, Sea of Love, Copland, 21 Grams, Out of Sight, Clockers, The Firm. His massive list of TV credits include Boardwalk Empire, Hostages, Law and Order, Criminal Intent, How to Make It in America, and Miami Vice. He's no stranger to the theater, having appeared with Robert De Niro in Cuba and His Teddy Bear. He also runs his own acting school, which you can find out more about at his website, www.paulcalderon.net. He's also a founding member of the Touchstone Theater, the American Folk Theater, and the Labyrinth Theater Company, as well as being a member of the Actors Studio since 1984. A consummate New York character actor all throughout his career, Paul brings energy and edge to every performance and every project. And as I said up top, we're extremely excited to have him on the show tonight. Welcome, Paul. Thanks a lot for chatting with us.
Thank you guys for having me on the show. So I'm looking forward to chatting. So thank you.
Yeah, man, I just I want to jump in right off the bat because I've been thinking about this ever since I knew we were going to have you on. Like I told you prior, Abel Ferrara is probably one of my favorite he is one of my favorite filmmakers of all time, and you've worked with him four times, right? I have that correct?
I can't remember the amount of times that I've worked with him. Four or five seems like it.
Yeah, and one of my all-time favorite movies, and I think it's one of the best movies I've ever seen, is Bad Lieutenant. And I was wondering if you could tell us some about that.
Well, you know, Bad Lieutenant was something that Abel and I and the late Vic Dargo, who's a great actor, had started talking about when we were shooting King of New York. And, you know, Abel had this idea about doing a movie about this incident that involved, you know, the rape and awful things that happened to this nun up in Spanish Harlem. And it so happened that the incidents happened like a block away from where I grew up in Spanish Harlem. So one thing led to another and led to another. And, you know, we would get together at Abel's loft and improvise and come up with ideas. And I took Abel and the producer of the film, Randy Subasawa, up to my neighborhood and talked to people and visited the church. And originally, it was Christopher Walken that we brought in to, you know, to read. Not so much to read, but to read the script. I mean, you know, it was going to be his, the role was. And, you know, we got together early in the morning at Abel's loft, and Chris read it, and he more or less said, well, you know, I'm not that interested. And it threw Abel for a loop because, you know, there went the money for the film. And then he reached out to Harvey, and Harvey went crazy about the script. We would get together with Harvey, we would write scenes on the go, improvise, and, you know, it was kind of a very collaborative type of effort, the Bad Lieutenant.
Yeah, when we talked to Ken Kelch about shooting the film, and it sounded like this hellish journey almost, in a way, of how everything was put together.
Yeah, you know, with Abel, anytime you're involved with Abel, it is kind of like, you know, a journey into the unknown. I mean, not in a bad way, but, you know, he's such a character. But so any involvement with Abel means that, you know, you're in for a journey into the unknown. Every journey that I've been on with him has been incredible, has been very informative and educational, and, you know, he's a great filmmaker. But, you know, he goes over that edge many times.
Go ahead, Nick.
I was going to say, I think that you brought it. I think you nailed it. Like, he goes over the edge, and I think that's what sort of makes him such a unique filmmaker. I mean, he's one of those great New York storytellers, and he's brought his own real gritty sensibility to every movie that, you know, he's worked on. And curious, just backing up a little bit from Bad Lieutenant, which we can certainly talk about more about. I'm just be curious to know how the Abel Ferrara connection started with, I guess it would be King of New York then, right?
No, as a matter of fact, I was in Mexico.
Or maybe
City.
Not.
I was living in Mexico City, and I got a call from a casting director that someone wanted me for a Miami Vice episode. And would I fly to Miami and be in the episode, blah, 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 blah. And that's how I first met Abel. Abel was the director of that Miami Vice episode, and that's how I first met him. A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah, Home Invasion and the first season.
Home Invasion with Issa Morales, David Patrick Kelly, and we had all three of us had been in a play at Second Stage in New York. What's the name of the play? Short Eyes, and Bonnie Timmerman, who was the casting director for Miami Vice, had seen us, so she decided to just kind of like call us in, you know. But I happened to be in Mexico City at the time. But, you know, I flew in, met Abel, and then what happened was that with King of New York, I was with the late Michael Kingman, who was a great agent, and I walked into his office one day because I used to hang out at his office. He had guys like Sam Rockwell and a whole bunch of other people, very talented people. So I walked into his office one afternoon. He said, "Hey, you know, we got this stupid script, and, you know, I want you to be in it." And I said, "Where's the script?" It was literally kind of like in the trash already. And I said, let me read it, you know. And so, you know, I sat there in the office, and as I was reading it, I said, "Who sent you this?" He said, "Oh, this crazy guy, Abel Ferrara." I said, "Oh, yeah, I know Abel." And I said, "No, man, let's, you know," even before I finished the script, I said, "Let's just call back and say that, you know, I'm on board."
And I will say that I was very much looking forward to Welcome to New York. That was hard for me to find and seek out to see it. And I knew that there was the unrated cut and then IFC cut an R-rated version. And I was fortunate enough to see the unrated cut. Actually, the funny thing is I bought it on Blu-ray off of Amazon and they were selling it as the unrated cut. And Ken Kelsch told me that it wasn't. And I was all disappointed. But anyway, I have seen the unrated cut multiple times and I love it. And your performance at the beginning is awesome. Nick and I have a screen grab of it when you're sitting with the chick and she's on your lap, and it's just like the greatest thing ever. But anyway, how did you get involved with Welcome to New York?
Again, it was one of these calls where my agent says, "Well, this guy Abel Ferrara is looking for you," and and seen Abel in about, I don't know, I think the last time I saw him was at a restaurant, Little Italy, after we did a retrospective on, was it King of New York? Yeah, King of New York at the Walter Reed Theater. And we hung out until the wee hours of the morning at a restaurant in Little Italy. So the next time I hear from him, you know, my agent is saying, you know, he wants to see you. So anyway, I went, I saw him, and he said, you know, "I need you and Paulie, I forget his name, Ship, is it Ship?
Paul Hip?
Paulie Hip. Great actor. He said, I need you guys. I want my team in this, meaning I need guys that I can trust that can go the extra mile." And he told me what the film was about and how he needed me and Paulie to make the girls comfortable because it was going to be like very edgy stuff. And I said, "Yeah, sure." So me and Paulie, you know, we did our best to make, I think the girls are trying to make us comfortable at the end.
Yeah, it's definitely an intense film. For those not familiar with Welcome to New York, I also want to say just a second about it real quick. It really is awesome. It's Abel Ferrara firing on all cylinders once again. It's the film, it's the film that stars Gerard Depardieu playing essentially Dominic Strauss-Kahn. It's got a very upfront sense of sexuality, sort of similar to stuff that maybe you saw in Wolf of Wall Street. You don't see too many mainstream movies, if I can call it mainstream, delving into sexuality the way that the movie did. And yeah, as Frank said, the introduction to your character there is pretty awesome. That certainly must have been I would have to imagine just to be like a highly charged set, because you're dealing with that kind of stuff, which I'd have to imagine is probably really interesting to shoot. You know, you take it for granted all the sex stuff you see in movies and TV shows, but when you're asked to film it, it's got to be an intense experience to do that.
Yes and no. I mean, having Ken there, you know, as a DP / cameraman / everything, made it easier, because, you know, we've also have done like 5 films together, Ken and I, you know, and we're good friends. Whenever we meet, you know, it's like we've, you know, we just saw each other like an hour before. And it was very, you know, it was intense in the sense that, it was charged. The atmosphere was charged, because there's always a volatile, creative, crazy energy between Ken and Abel. And then you throw Depardieu into the mix. So it was like, you know, Dodge City, and it was kind of crazy.
I bet.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that Welcome to New York felt very Bad Lieutenant-esque, with Abel Ferrara making the quintessential transgressive film. And I think that's what makes his film so great. And I do love how he has like this family that he constantly uses, which obviously you're a part of. And I always enjoy seeing that in Ferrara's films, the same people. It's awesome. But moving on, I mentioned earlier that you're like in 3 of my favorite films. The other one, obviously, and it's another one of the best films ever made, is Pulp Fiction. And I'm wondering how you became involved with that project.
Yeah, that's another crazy story. I got a call. My agent said that this director wanted to see me, and I hadn't seen Reservoir Dogs, so I really didn't know Quentin. And then when I went in, he wanted me to read for Jules, which was, you know, the role that Samuel Jackson wound up doing. And then he asked me to come in the following day and read again. And I think, I don't know if you've heard the stories, but I went in, and then it got very, very, very intense and crazy. Because it just got very, very, very crazy. To make a long story short, it came down to me and Sam, or Sam and I, and we both had to audition at the, what was it, Sony Culver Studios, or Sony Studios in Culver City. I don't know the cities and the studios. They're all in a mix. So anyway, they flew me out to L.A. This was a month and a couple of weeks after the initial auditions, and the last thing I saw was, as you know, Quentin and the producers and the casting directors were taking a break before Sam came in. He was walking through the empty lots, because I remember it was a Sunday. I knew that I had kind of like not done my best at the auditions, but he turned around and he gave me a thumbs up, like, but I knew, and I took the red eye back to New York, and then I heard that, you know, Sam got the part, you know, she well deserved, great actor, gone through a lot in his life, and that established him. But, you know, in a way, I'm kind of glad. I know it sounds kind of weird, but I'm kind of glad that it all went down, because at the time I didn't know whether I wanted to have a family or not. And if I had landed the film, I probably would not have opted for a family. And after that, I did. And, you know, right now I have a 21-year-old son that I'm really, really, really great friends with, and an 18-year-old, and he's also a great person. So, you know, I'm kind of happy for that because that was kind of like the catalyst that said, okay, it's now or never to start a family.
I mean, but you were English Bob, and you do have one of the most quoted lines from the film.
I'm
right?
Bald.
So, I mean,
I'm bald, and this between you all.
Yeah, you'll never.
That is awesome. We should just use that clip every podcast.
Yeah, I just want to get in there too on Pulp Fiction. Pulp Fiction was a life changing movie for me, as a cinema lover and just somebody who really just became infatuated with film and the idea of filmmaking. And I can remember seeing that film on the big screen, and everything about it still feels vivid and very fresh. And I remember your performance like it was, you know, like I'm watching it right now. And that whole sequence in the bar is just wonderful. And it's always the thing I've loved about Tarantino's movies is that he has such a great eye for casting. And you always feel like everybody who's in their role is like exactly for that role, no matter if they have one line or 100 lines. It's really exciting to talk to somebody involved in that film. And when you were working on Pulp Fiction and you had that scene, what was it like working with Bruce Willis and John Travolta and, you know, everybody? What was the experience like?
Well, you know, with Bruce, he's a very interesting guy. He's very inventive. He's very, 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 very inventive. I got along with him. And John Travolta is very quiet. You know, if you get his name out of him, that's a lot. Not that he's standoffish or anything. He's just very, very quiet and just keeps to himself. Sam I knew, Ving I knew. So it was an easy set. It was a very relaxed set. You know, Tarantino creates a very, when I knew him, he used to create a very relaxed set because I had an opportunity to work with him again as a director and actor in Four Rooms, along with Bruce Willis and Tim Roth. And again, it was a very creative, laid-back, fun atmosphere that he created on that set as well.
Yeah, Four Rooms is amazing. I love that. Obviously, I think the part you're in is the best of the three or four. Four. Obviously, it's Four Rooms. Duh.
Yeah.
There's only three rooms, but it's called Four Rooms. No,
it's
anyway, it's
Four
Rooms.
Yeah.
That. But yeah, no, it's very cool that you were in both those. And like Nick was saying about Pulp Fiction, like the detail of everything. I mean, you're even wearing like the little kitchen cleaning gloves. It's awesome.
Yeah, I don't even remember that much. I think the thing that I remember the most, first day of shooting was that they told me that Sonny Chiba had just been on the set. And I had missed him. And you know, Quentin is such an incredible movie buff as I am, and he has, you know, much more vast knowledge than I do. And we were just like quizzing each other about films and this and that. But he having told me that Sonny Chiba, that I had just missed Sonny Chiba, was like, man.
I had no idea Sonny Chiba was on the set of Pulp Fiction. That's incredible.
Yeah, he came to visit or something like that, you know. So like literally like maybe 20 minutes before I arrived.
Wow.
And
it's insane.
And in between working with Tarantino, you have a chance to work with Spike Lee on Clockers, which I've always felt is one of Spike Lee's best movies, a movie that doesn't get as much acclaim or attention as it, in my opinion, as it deserves. What was it like working on that film? Because that's a very intense, just a very intense, you know, New York crime film. And I'm wondering, you know, how that came about.
Well, you know, I'd known Spike for a while. He had seen me in, I think the play you mentioned, Cuba and a Steady Bear with Robert De Niro. And he brought me in to several projects, and I just wasn't able to work on the first couple of projects that he had called me in for because I was working. You know, I was working either in Toronto or Vancouver or, I don't know, somewhere else, and we just couldn't get it together. You know, he had always wanted to work with me, and you know, he called me up and said, would you do this character, Jesus? And I said, sure. And, you know, it was great working with Harvey and Totoro, great actors, and it's just a lot of fun, you know. And Spike is also creates a very, very relaxed atmosphere on the set, and you know, working with Harvey, very, very, very giving actor, and had always admired him coming up. So it was great having an opportunity to work with these guys that you've admired coming up, like, you know, Harvey and De Niro and Walken and all those guys, you know.
Yeah, you've worked with Harvey Keitel 3 times, I think. Bad Lieutenant, Clockers, Copland, I guess 4 times, but you didn't share any scenes in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, he just reminded me. He just reminded me of Copland. Yeah, there too.
Yeah, Harvey Keitel's been one of my all-time favorite actors of all time, and we spoke to Ken, and he was saying how nice of a guy he was. And I just think, I mean, it's not that I don't believe it, but it's just crazy because everything that I know him from and love him from, it's ingrained. He's just almost like a psychopath, which is, you know, he's kind of played that multiple times in his career, but he's in Youth this year, and that film's fantastic. And he kind of, I think it's the role of his lifetime. But anyway, what's Harvey Keitel like?
Well, you know, Harvey, you know, and I've had an opportunity to get to know him a little bit better because he had optioned a screenplay that I had written a few years back, which I eventually shelved because of some complications. But, you know, he had his offices. He had his own production company, Goat Singers. And he's a very loyal guy. He's a very giving guy. At the same time, he's a very complex individual. He's, you know, he can be really, really tough when he needs to be tough. But at the same time, like I said, he's a very giving, generous individual and was best friends with, again, you know, great actress since passed away, whom I mentioned earlier, Victor Argo. And Victor was a fellow Puerto Rican and was Harvey's best friend. And you know, Victor just loved him. And when Victor passed away, you know, Harvey took it pretty hard. So he's a very, like I said, very generous. But at the same time, you know, he can be very, very, very tough and intimidating if you cross the line or if he thinks that you've crossed the line. But all in all, you know, wonderful artist, really generous person.
Yeah, and he's always been great. I love him too. And he gives just a ferocious performance in Copland as one of the key crooked cops. So Copland's a great movie. You know, 1997, James Mangold, Sylvester Stallone, people who haven't seen it, it's a great Sylvester Stallone performance. And your scene in Copland is, you know, on the bridge. I mean, that is one of the most critical points of the film. You're sort of acting as the conscience of the story, and you are, you provide a sense of really righteous rage, you know, at the actions of these corrupt cops. And what was it like shooting that scene, and were you really on that bridge, and you know, what time of the night was that filmed at? I've always wondered. And
yeah, it's an interesting story. You know, when you mentioned, were we really on that bridge, we were on that bridge. Yeah, we hadn't until, I don't know, 5-6 a.m. And we shot as much as we could on that bridge, and then we had to you know, we had to shut down because, you know, we only had the bridge for a certain period of time. And then they told me, well, we're going to pick up the scene a month from now. and then when I arrived on the set, we were in a warehouse. And I said, what? I thought we were going to be back on the bridge. They said, no. And they had all these girders up. I mean, the set designer was incredible. I said, I don't think you're going to make this look like a bridge. He said, we'll make it look like a bridge. We'll see. We'll cut it, and it'll look like a bridge. When I saw the scene, I said, man, they really did an incredible job. It looks like we're on the bridge. Being in the film, being in that scene, I could not tell that I was not on that bridge.
Now I have to watch the scene tonight to see how it all cut together. I won't know what was filmed and where, but that's awesome to hear. That's crazy. Yeah, and it's an explosive moment. I mean, it's like one of the critical moments of that film, and you really nail it in that moment. It's great.
Well, man, go ahead.
I was just gonna say I can't even believe that was in a warehouse. I have to, like Nick said, I have to rewatch it again too. That's insane.
Yeah, it's the majority of the scene is on the bridge, but the moment where I get the gun and I shouted, who was it, Robert Patrick, yeah, terrific actor. When I confront him, I believe even some of the fight sequence between he and I, and when I throw the gun over the bridge, and afterwards, when he comes at me again, that's all in the warehouse.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah,
that's crazy. That's awesome, though. Yeah, we spoke with the editor, Craig McKay, about it, and it was very cool. He didn't mention that though, which is cool. But podcast them softly exclusive. But what Nick was saying earlier, yeah, your character's so vital in that film because out of all the characters, I think your character is the one that represents like nobility and what's right and wrong, and that's that character's motivation, as opposed to everybody else's that are skewed. And how did you become involved with that? Was that just like another casting director thing?
No, that was actually Mangle. Who kind of got a hold of me, and when I went to meet him, he said, from what he wanted from the role, he said, you're the only one that can nail it the way I know you can nail it. And once he told me that, I knew what he wanted. And that's how I got connected with Copland.
That's one of the best acting ensembles, too.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, Paul, it's like some of the credits that you have, Pulp Fiction, obviously Four Rooms, Copland, and the next movie I wanted to ask about, Out of Sight. All of these movies have such amazing ensembles, and it's so crazy that you had been in four or five of these movies, let alone one or something. I'm a huge Steven Soderbergh fan. I think Out of Sight's one of his best movies. Sort of represents, what I think he does really well on both sides with independent cinema and studio cinema. And that movie sort of was a great combination of, both of his styles. And how did you get involved with Soderbergh, and what was it like working with him on Out of Sight?
Again, it was a phone call. I believe one of the producers of Out of Sight that worked with me, I can't remember his name, but he told Soderbergh, oh yeah, I know someone to play Cruz, the detective, and they flew me out to Detroit, and first day on the set, there I am, with Soderbergh and everybody else. And, Soderbergh's really, really cool because, there's some directors that you can talk to, others that you can't. And he's very, very open. I was just talking to him one-on-one and talking about Elmo Leonard and Leonard's novels and this and that. And he gives very, very, very little direction. He just lets you go unless he doesn't like something. If he doesn't like something, he'll let you know. But basically, it's just staying out of your way and allowing you to do your thing.
No, I'm not surprised to hear that because, he's worked with so many actors, and they always seem to be, giving very naturalistic performances in all of his work. And so I guess I'm not surprised to hear that. And it's just another great instance of you being involved in this terrific ensemble. And I don't know if these movies just sort of found you, or you found that, however it went down. It's really incredible to think about.
Well, a lot of it is luck. A lot of it is just people remembering you or calling you, and you agreeing to do something, even though, you know, it's not going to pay that much. And sometimes, you know, you choose things because of who's involved. And sometimes you turn things down because, you know, because of who's involved. And but, you know, all the movies that you mentioned were people that I wanted to work with. And, you know, that's always the carte blanche, you know, is to I want to work with those people.
Another film I wanted to ask you about, another favorite of Nick and I, is Sea of Love. How did you become involved with that one? That was an earlier one, one of your earlier movie credits.
Yeah, Sea of Love was, you know, it was an audition. I went in, I auditioned. I got the part. Then they went to Toronto. I couldn't go because I was working on something else, so I couldn't do the table read in Toronto. Then before I knew it, they said they had decided to go with another director named Harold Becker, and we would all have to audition again. So all the non-stars, meaning the only guys that weren't going to go into audition, I believe, were Pacino, Goodman, and the girl, I forget her name, the lady. But anyway, we all had to go back in and re-audition. 70% of us did not get our roles back. We were all sweating out in the waiting area, you know, waiting to go in and re-audition because we didn't know Harold Becker. I had known he had done The Onion Field, which is an incredible film. But when I went in, I auditioned, and as I was leaving, you know, the casting director came after me and said, "You got the part." Then when I went out, I had to wait for a friend of mine who came out, and he told me, you know, they said that they'd be in touch. So I knew he hadn't gotten the part, which was a sad thing because he was a great actor. And then what happened was, you know, we shot, the original script was really a gritty script. And more or less, I was Pacino's right-hand man in his life of debauchery outside the force. You know, we would hang out at the sleazy bars and 42nd Street porn theaters and... Then what happened, Fatal Attraction came out, because it was a 10-week shoot in Toronto. So then Fatal Attraction came out, and the producers decided to remake the film and turn it into sort of a Fatal Attraction. And we shot for another 11 weeks. So we were shooting that film for 21 weeks. When I went to the premiere, I kind of sat in my seat and kind of like slowly melted into the floor because like 80% of my stuff had been edited out in favor of the new premise of the film.
So the whole film shifted when Fatal Attraction came out?
Correct.
Wow. I didn't know that.
And that's got to be tough as a performer to put in that work and then have it not show up.
Well, you know, it's happened to better men than myself, so, and it'll happen again to others. So it's something that it's a given in this business. You know, you can put out your best, and it happened to me later on with another project. A project that I turned down 3 times, just telling the director that I wasn't happy, and she kept saying, "Well, you're the only one who can bring out the vulnerability of this character, and I wound up doing the film." And all those scenes were eventually edited out because supposedly I was a little bit too vulnerable and was taking too much of the limelight away from the person who needed to be perceived as vulnerable by the audience. And, you know, you shrug and you say, "Okay, that's they're the director, they know what they want, and eventually it's their story, you know."
I want to ask you about a relatively obscure credit on your resume, an obscure I say obscure in a great way because it's a movie I saw a lot back in the day. What was it like working on Penn and Teller Get Killed? Because that's one of the That is one of the weirdest movies ever made. And of course, as I recall, this was Arthur Penn, I believe, who was directing this towards the end of his career.
Correct.
What was it like working with Arthur Penn and in specific that film? Because that is one of the craziest movies. The last 5 minutes of that movie, followed by the end credit sequence, is one of the most nuts things ever.
I had met Penn Jillette on the set of one of the Key Miami Vice episodes that I had, that I did. I think this was movie of the week or TV movies. You know, one of those things that are an hour and a half instead of your usual hour. And I met him there. We got along. He invited me to, you know, his shows, you know, or to his show on Broadway or off-Broadway at the time. And he said he's going to make this movie with Arthur Penn, and he wanted me to play this character. And so I met Arthur, and, you know, he said, hey, you know, you want to be in the movie? And I said, well, it's Arthur Penn, you know. And, you know, it's like Bonnie and Clyde and a whole bunch of other films. So I said, sure, you know. And we shot it, and I can't remember much. I know it was hot. It was on the beach, and Arthur was just was very laid back, and it was cool. You know, it was, you know, I enjoyed myself. Nothing much to say other than that, you know, I had an opportunity to work with a legend in Arthur Penn, and, you know, I can always look back and say, you know, I worked with that guy, you know.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's just a movie I saw like when I was younger, and I really had no idea what I was watching, but I always knew that it entertained me. I came across it online, and like part of it's on YouTube, like the last like 10 minutes, and I'm watching it and I'm saying to myself, man, this really was one of the craziest endings to any movie ever. I highly recommend people try to track down Penn and Teller Get Killed. It'll make for a very, unexpected evening of entertainment, I would say.
Yeah, Arthur Penn, you know, he's kind of known for that. If you see the Missouri Breaks, you know, he had the unexpected there as well, you know.
Yeah, his filmography was amazing. And actually, it's funny you brought up Missouri Breaks. That's one I haven't seen yet, and it's coming up in my Netflix queue, and I'm quite excited. I noticed that this morning, actually, that it's funny that you're bringing that up. It's one that I've always wanted to see. Go ahead.
And if you haven't seen The Chase, give that a try as well.
The Chase?
The Chase with Brando, Redford.
The Chase
Fonda,
is amazing.
You know, so it's a nitty gritty film. It takes place down in the Deep South, and Brando plays sheriff, and so it's worth watching.
I need to check this one out for sure.
Yeah, just buy it. It's awesome. I want to ask you, go back and ask you, how'd you start becoming an actor? What made you become an actor?
Well, I didn't know what else to do with my life. You know, I originally wanted to be a ball player. I threw pretty hard for my frame, but then I injured my arm. I think the Dodgers and the Pirates were, you know, scouting me, and, you know, I had a verbal agreement from a Pirate scout, but I just couldn't get my arm back together. You know, I was playing in those semi-pro leagues in Central Park, all the Dominicans that don't make it to the pros or there trying to make it back. And I was young, I was like 18, and I, like I said, I threw very, very, very hard. So it didn't materialize, and I went through a funk because that was my dream. And then I went to college, got thrown out of college, then I went back, and then I got thrown out again. I just didn't know what to do, so I joined the service. But before I joined the service while in college, to make a long story short, I tried for one of their productions. I wasn't chosen, but there was one professor who would hold in improv classes after school, and I attended, and he took me aside and said, you should pursue this. You're very talented. And that always stuck with me. So a few years later, while I was in the service, I realized the service was not for me. I remember that professor's words, and when I came out of the service, I started attending acting school because I just didn't know what else to do with my life, you know. And then, you know, I just hung around, you know. I wasn't a very good self-promoter. And this was back in the day where self-promoting was a hell of a lot more important than it is now because, you know, you actually had to dial a phone and make a call. There were no computers. There were no cell phones. There was no texting. There was nothing. I mean, you just had to do it on your own. And since I was a very shy kind of guy, it took me literally like 6 years before I landed an agent.
And what was one of your – what's the first memory you have? What was your first paid acting experience on a set?
It was a film which I won't mention. But the people were trying to go legit. They, you know, after I decided to, when I accepted to do the film for $100 a day plus $25 per diem, I found out that they had been porno producers. And if you watch the film, there's a little bit of that, you know, kinky kind of titillation, sexual titillation, and so that was a pretty scary. That was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. But it was that was my first introduction to being in Hollywood, and it wasn't even Hollywood. It was somewhere here in New York.
Wow. To think that, and then 90 roles later over the course of television and film and theater, and I mean, it's insane. I mean, you've also had a chance to do a lot of television work. Boardwalk Empire is a big one on your list. What was the experience like working on that program? Another effort that you've been involved in with an amazing ensemble.
Yeah, with that, it was, you know, they called me up and they wanted me to audition for this role. But they wanted me to audition the following day. And I said, you know what, thank you, but no thank you, because they had sent me the sides and there was a lot of lines, which is kind of weird because eventually my character wound up not saying hardly anything. Because he was the quintessential, you know, silent, deathy type. And I said no, and my manager called me up. He said, don't you know it's Boardwalk Empire? And he mentioned all the people involved. And I said, yeah, but you know what? If I'm going to go in, I might as well just, if I don't get it, I might as well just say, hey, listen, I did my best, as opposed to, you know, if I'd had a couple of days, I probably could have nailed it. So they gave me the extra couple of days, and I went in, I got it. And, you know, I knew Steve. I had worked with Steve before. And we used to have, we used to run into each other in Fire Island when we both used to hang out there. And so it was great working with him, and the rest of the ensemble was great. There was an ex-student of mine who has had one of the leads as well, which was really gratifying. And overall, you know, it's a close-knit ensemble. The directors, the crew, the DPs, the cameramen, the gaffers, and, you know, shooting at Steiner Studios, a lot of the interiors was great. And then making everything look authentic, you know, with a lot of CGI involved was really awesome.
Yeah, you mentioned one of your former students. Tell us about your acting school.
Well, you know, I just decided to teach on my own. It's much more laid back, you know. I've taught other places as well, and I still do, but very, very, very on a very limited fashion. It's just, you know, I co-teach it with my wife. She's an incredible, she was an incredible director. Was signed by William Morris many years ago as a director and then decided to leave that in order to raise a family. And she was the original artistic director of the Latin Theater Company, which she also decided to leave because, again, you know, the family. So we go teach it, you know, when I'm available, I teach. And it's very laid back. We don't charge an arm and a leg. And we try to, you know, use a very inclusive type of method, not the Strasberg method, just a method that is very inclusive of all the methods that I've learned over the years and also the ways of working that I've seen others use over the years, what I've seen work, try to avoid what I've seen not work, and trying to encourage the students to persevere and to go beyond their imposed limits, as opposed to, you know, you got to do it my way or else it's not going to work. We're not dictators, you know, we try to encourage as much as possible, and many times I just go up there and act with them, and not to show them how to do it, but just to give them a sense of maybe this is the way it could work. So, you know, that's a little bit about the my classes.
And this is done out of New York?
Yeah, this is done right across the street from the Public Theater.
Awesome. Yeah, it's always it always has to be a very, I would imagine, a very fulfilling thing to, you know, take what you've learned throughout the, you know, such an amazing career and all these people that you've had experiences with and, you know, sort of give back to people who are trying to hone their craft and try to make a name for themselves as you've done for yourself. Is there anything that you can share with us that's coming up in the near future? Any, you know, movies, television, theater, anything new?
Well, like about 3.5 months ago, 4 months ago, I contacted my manager and I said that I was going to take a leave of absence because I've been working on a couple of plays and I've been also I've been working on creating a theater company myself and this other gentleman, whom I won't mention because I've been asking him if I could mention his name, but he's a well-known actor. He's done tons of stuff, film, TV, and theater. And about 10 months ago, we decided to put our heads together and create something along the lines of the old Labyrinth Theater Company, whom, you know, we were both members of. So we've been doing a lot of get-togethers and readings and explorations with a core group of actors, and I think in the last week of January, we're going to put up a stage reading of a play that was homegrown and, you know, just putting our name out there and eventually doing production. And then and then what happened was, you know, my manager was not happy with me taking time off. But at the same time, I said, you know, I got these other things I want to concentrate on. I really don't need the money. Not that I'm rich by any means. I'm not, but I've always lived within my means. And I really don't, you know, plays I don't do anymore because of, you know, over the years, I refused to do any plays because of my kids, you know, because the weekends are shot once you do a play. Now, since they're older, you know, I'm venturing back into that slowly. And so, you know, about like, 3-4 weeks ago, you know, she started emailing me. I said, don't even call me. Don't even tap me. I just don't want to do anything. And then she started kind of like, you know, saying, well, someone's calling, someone's inquiring, and so forth and so on. And last week I decided to do a Blue Bloods episode because Treat Williams is in it, you know, and they wanted me. They said, you know, would you reprise this role that you did a couple of years ago on Blue Bloods? It's going to be with Treat Williams and Tom Selleck. I said, yeah, great. So I get that. And then supposedly in about 3 weeks, they offered me a recurring role in Blind Spot, which I didn't have to audition.
Oh, awesome.
Oh, nice. One of the first guys that we ever spoke to on our show is Mark Pellington, has been working on Blind Spot. So that's great.
Yeah, so they called me up and they said, you know, would you do a recurring on this, you know? And I said, yeah, sure. I mean, you know, and then there's a film that, you know, I'm hoping on doing, hopefully maybe in the late spring. It'll take place in Atlantic City. It's an independent film. I would be the lead in that. It's a very interesting role. And the director just contacted me out of the blue. He said he'd been a fan of mine, blah, blah, blah. And so, you know, that's what I have in line right now. But I'm shying away from committing to anything that's going to, I guess, put a weight on me as far as being away from home or having to be on set for long periods of time.
That's awesome. I really hope your film works out. That'd be awesome to see. Playing the lead, that'd be great.
Yeah, it's a great script. It's a great script. And, you know, I've seen the gentleman's other independent films and short films. And, you know, he's very, very, very talented. So we're hoping that that'll materialize.
Awesome. Well, good luck with that. Hopefully that works out. Thank you so much for your time. This has been much appreciated, and this has been a great chat, and this has been fantastic. But before we go, I just wanted to ask you, what is your favorite film that you've worked on? Because you've been in so much great stuff.
A Q&A by, Q&A. And the reason
Q&A,
being,
that's awesome.
Q&A, yeah. The reason being is that it was Sidney Lumet, and, you know, I had always admired him as a director, and just his way of working, you know, he rehearses for 2 weeks. So you get like a free intensive on how to make films and how to write films and how to direct, because he's there doing everything, you know, for 2 weeks. And it was just an incredible experience working with Nick Nolte and a lot of the old time great New York actors that Lumet used.
Yeah, he was one of the best directors of actors, and it's funny, I've been meaning to revisit Q&A over the last few months, and I certainly will now that you've said that it was your, your favorite film that you worked on. And I can easily see why you'd pick that one out of the bunch, Lumet, one of the greatest, filmmakers that there ever was. So, as Frank said, it really was a treat to chat with you, and thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us, two fans, and we certainly look forward to seeing, as much of you that you want to put on the screen as possible.
Well, thank you guys for reaching out and asking me to be on the show. I didn't know I can talk this much for so long, so thank you for making me feel comfortable here. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem, man. Anytime. You're more than welcome to come back on anytime. If you ever want to promote anything or hype something, you're more than welcome anytime.
Yeah, or just to talk about movies in general, whatever you want.
Okay, I'll take you guys up on that.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much.
All right, Frank, Nick, thank you so much. So long.